Good afternoon and welcome to another Tag Talks. I'm General Gregory S. Johnson, Tag 63, and pretty excited to be talking primarily about data today, but I'm probably more excited to be talking with the four people in the room. Really, I'm counting myself as one of the four. I'm excited to be here with three others. Leading the pack is Jordan Morrow, who's been on a previous Tag Talk and is really known affectionately as the godfather of data literacy, right? I say data analytics, data literacy, but it's probably data literacy, right, Jordan?
Yeah, and now in today's day and age, it's bringing in the topic of AI literacy at the same time. That's got to be a part of it.
Okay, ba-bam. You know, make it deeper and harder to move forward, I think. Definitely. Okay, and we also got Colonel Chris Sailing, who has a bit of a niche in the Army as being what I would say our primary innovator, but also in that innovation lens, doing all things data and helping the Army think through data literacy and where we need to go. So, Chris, thanks for being on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, sir.
Awesome.
Thanks, data people and people data.
I know, awesome. And then,
well, you've got a good tagline as the tag. I have to have a tagline too.
Yeah, the tagline, the tag your it. There's so many possibilities. And then, of course, Tom Maleko sitting right next to me here in the studio, affectionately known as Mustache Tom. So, thanks, Tom, for having your mustache today.
Of course, sir.
Welcome to the podcast.
Absolutely, sir. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, awesome. So, okay, so this is more people than we usually have, but really wanted to get a good crosstalk discussion and just let the conversation flow about real. You know, I think the tagline is, so, hey, you took data 101, what's next? It's really about data literacy, and you get familiarized with data literacy as a concept in a training course, and really what's next for organizations. That's really the overarching topic today. But maybe I pass it over to you, Tom. You know, what do you think? What do you think of the topic? What do you think of the, you know, what's next after you do this? And then we can just go around and have a conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. So you know, having taught data literacy 101 now to, you know, HRC probably about a half dozen times, and really across different Army organizations, across different joint elements now, one of the frequent things I hear from leaders when I do the outbriefs is, okay, we've done data 101, what is the next step? And I think the first part of that conversation is that I don't want it to be like any other Army training where you've done your SHARP training, you've done your EO training, and you're good for the rest of the year,
yeah, right?
It should be something that's a lot more continuous.
Yeah.
And then how do you instantiate as part of the culture of the organization and really beginning to lead down a pathway to building a data-driven or a data-centric organization and culture? And so I look forward to seeing kind of how Jordan has, you know, tackled this in the past, given some of his previous experiences,
yeah,
and kind of helping coach us to building that long-term strategy, both about that continuous level of learning, but then also how you kind of implement this in the day-to-day workflow, because that's really what it's all about.
Yeah, you know, mandatory training is such a thing in military organizations. Yeah, we don't want this to be a one-off. Hey, you do it once a year, and then we call it a day. We're really trying to transform our organizations with this as a mechanism. Hey, Jordan, can you maybe talk a little bit about why there needs to be a string of events and why there needs to be a string of even organizational tasks to make, you know, all this data literacy effort, you know, worthwhile?
Yeah, I think Tom actually started off and really did a good job of kind of setting the stage of where you go in that next step. And one of those needs to be the culture aspect, right? It's one thing to take on data literacy 101. It's one thing to take on the training. It's one thing to go through that. But then there's almost two paths, I would say, that follow directly after. One of them is ensuring that there's adoption, and that's going to come down to change management. That's going to come down to culture and those pieces. So that's one streamline that you're looking at. The second streamline is, what training do you follow up with? It's great to learn all these principles, but then, as we talked, I think, in the very first time I was with General Johnson, it was, you then have to put these principles in action. And to put them in action, you look at training paths around how do you now make decisions with data and how do you tie those decisions back to an objective. You then tie in data storytelling. And that's, it's almost this pathway that goes data literacy, you learn the concepts. Data-driven decision-making, you learn how to make decisions off it. Data storytelling, you learn how to communicate with it. And so you've got these two channels that you're now operating in. It's number one, the culture, becoming more data-driven, et cetera. And it goes right in parallel, and it's basically like a sibling or a cousin to putting all the principles into action. And that's how you can proceed forward to get the adoption, to start using data, and in this case, like a GPT sort of AI tool helping you move along the path.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack, though, with those two paths, right, Jordan?
100%. Yeah, this is not a, like, we can't just take a decision-making course and then, boom, we're doing it. We're now making data-driven decisions. This is how you do it. Now let's make sure we're implementing. This is why change management, to me, has been a forgotten area within data and AI and analytics, in the sense that you buy tools, you take training, boom, you should be able to do this. And no, that's not how that works, unfortunately. It's you buy tools, you take training, and you apply change management principles to look for the adoption, to test cases out, to allow these sandbox, these playgrounds, where people feel free and comfortable to do it. Because if they don't feel free and comfortable to do it, they're going to be maybe timid or have fear around it. So you're absolutely right. It's not as simple as Jordan saying on this episode, this is what you do. This is what you do. Now let's create actionable strategic steps with structure to make sure it can be successful.
Yeah. And I think, you know, in our journey here at Human Resources Command and inside the Adjutant General, part of that is doing the work up front to kind of show the roadmap. And I know we're actually still putting that together here in our organizations. Because I do think it's like you got to show the so what. Hey, I'm going in this direction. Here's the heavy why I'm going in this direction and why it's so important. And then along the way, really deep diving into each of these steps, so you can refine, solidify where you're going. It's almost like hey, you're solidifying your island hopping campaign. Through the Pacific in World War II, you're moving one island to another island to another island as you drive forward to that final outcome. So a lot there. Hey, I do want to pass it over to Chris Sailing. Chris, hey, you're in this innovation space, doing lots of things. I mean, maybe riff a little bit on change management and what you've seen has worked and maybe not worked.
Now, I'm glad you went that direction, sir, because I really wanted to emphasize what both Tom and Jordan said about change management and adoption, because we see that a lot when everybody has an innovation, they have a new idea, they run it as an initiative, they get to the pilot or the prototype or the MVP, and they get stuck a lot of times. So they get stuck at, we took data 101, we have this discussion going on, now what? And during that whole process, as we're rolling this out, we've got a great training program. It's out there, but we really need to do some co-building and lay out that roadmap for how we get this instantiated into the organization. I think the second piece of it also is normalizing that introducing new programs like this is not going to be a one-time thing. There's going to be a continuous learning and improvement process that happens. And as we get people to the base level of data literacy, there's going to be more things that are available, more self-initiated courses, more available instruction as we keep rolling these things out. I mean, just looking at what Jordan was talking about with introducing some AI literacy, there's so many tools that are so prevalent. We have to have people with a basic understanding of what they are and kind of basically how they work, not the technical side of it, but just the principles. So as we are rolling out Data 101 into larger, more adopted training, we're also trying to develop these new pieces of instruction, and we'll just kind of get into a cycle of having these things rolled out, used, instantiated, the co-building to get the roadmap for continued practice, and we just build that cycle.
Yeah.
Right. Well, sorry, sir. No, yeah, I was going to say, right, because that starts to tie into, I think, what Jordan was saying, though, about kind of building that endless curiosity and then having the space as an organization, right, to really be able to experiment and to play in sandboxes and really kind of facilitating both at the individual level, the freedom to go experiment with things like ChatGPT and figure out what it can do for you, or Dolly and what that can do for you. But then having the organizational space to say, hey, this thing is working for us. How do we now institutionalize it? And then how do we go about, you know, making that work? Or if it doesn't work, saying, hey, you know what, we don't like that outcome. How do we pivot to something else that does work? And I think that's something we oftentimes are very fearful of in the Army, right? We don't want to fail. But we need to be able to kind of keep pushing the boundaries. In order to do that, you need the flexibility to experiment and play a little bit.
Yeah, and Jordan, you know, I almost bring it back to why. You actually really quickly, very clearly, and maybe say it, you know, 1.5 million times over, you know, why are we doing this?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. That topic is And what I would say is, you know, my journey with the Army has been, it's over 3 years now, I think, Chris, that you and I started talking back in 2021.
Oh, yeah.
And that was well before generative AI hit mainstream. Mm-hmm. And I think what's really interesting is this rapid pace and evolution in technology that is now at our fingertips and augmenting so many aspects of our lives. You know, it's no longer just for the nerdies over here or there doing data science and coding and this and that. Number one, these tools and technologies empower us not to have to be as nerdy and not have to code. But number two, they are now just a part of life. And in order for organizations, whether it's a military organization, a public company on the stock exchange, whatever it is, they have to be developing skills within these spaces in order to compete, whatever that competition may be. In this case, it could be warfare, it could be recruiting, it could be attrition of people, it could be all these different things. And I think that's the power, is that when we view these things in that sense, that they are there to augment us and empower us to make better decisions and to grow intelligence and knowledge, man, that's a powerful way to look at it versus, man, you have to learn data, you have to do this. We're tying it to a why, and the why matters.
Yeah, and for me, Jordan, we're very deliberately at the Human Resources Command and the Adjutant General Directorate, really much interested in the better decisions, faster decisions, decisions with real data versus, you know, whatever the gut feel decision. And then ultimately being able to use that to improve how we do the soldier experience and support of soldiers. So that's the big, you know, so what? We think there's a lot of strategic reasons why we want to execute those. And those strategic reasons are all about how do I keep soldiers in the Army? How do I recruit soldiers? How do I make sure soldiers and their families have something good to say about the Army as they transition out so we can keep our all-volunteer force strong and really in play for the Army. So for us, there's this real, like, hey, there's a tangible why, and then there's a strategic why that we're really driving after. But, you know, getting that, you know, permeated and that understood all throughout our organization maybe is not the easiest thing to do, you know, on the face of it.
Well, sir, if I can riff on that real quick.
Yeah, go.
So I think you brought it down really, really well there with the tangible and with the strategic outcomes that you want to hit. But sometimes we just have to anchor people a little bit into something that they use practically and kind of get over the idea that this is something that's radically new and different. A lot of times I want to point people to like the weather forecast. If you look at a percent chance it's going to rain, that gives you one bit of information. But when you start getting live feed data on what the radar looks like, you can make a different set of decisions. So what we're looking at in terms of recruiting and retention is getting down into the individual level and not just looking at a raw percentage of how many people we might attrit at a certain time. So I think showing people the different depth of decision-making capability they have with these increased amounts of data gives them something to anchor in so that they can better understand what it is we're trying to get them to do when looking at the problem sets you list.
Yeah.
Are you okay, General, if I now rip off that?
Yeah, please go, Jordan.
Like two things on it is, number one, I think that what Chris just mentioned, Colonel Sangling just mentioned, is powerful beyond that in the sense that I use the weather app as a way to point out to people that they already use data and technology to make decisions so that they understand we're not here to make them feel like you have to be as nerdy as Tom and I. Sorry, Term, but Tom, that's the reality. They don't need to be as nerdy as us. they could grow mustaches like
both,
us.
Both have mustaches, by the way. Hold on.
Absolutely. But what I would also say to it is, when we think about the attractiveness of recruiting and stuff, I think data, AI, learning, and all that the Army is doing is a powerful way to show, look, we are with these new technologies. We are here doing this, and we can create that for you, too. And I think that's a powerful way within the recruiting side, too.
Yeah, go ahead, Tom.
No, I think when you're, like, and Jordan, you jumped ahead to where I was going to go too, off of Colonel Sailing's point, which was, you know, a lot of times when we talk data literacy, I often go back to the weather, and people have no problem reading weather graphs. They have no problem reading, you know, a chart in the back of the Washington Post that's saying, you know, what the weather is going to be over the next few days. And so for me, a lot of times, it's not discomfort with charts or graphs. It's just a general discomfort with data that they're not familiar with seeing. And so as you go towards that culture piece that you hit on earlier, how do you make this natural and like a fluid element of it? So when you're looking at, say, a piece of fruit, we're going, ah, that's an orange. We're not thinking about it, well, it's an orange sphere. It must be an orange, right? It just becomes natural and intuitive that you say, yep, that's what it is, and we can move on to the next part of the conversation. It should just be a natural part of the experience when you're working.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great segue to what I wanted to tease out of the team here today was, you know, what are some of those small actions then that we can do to start to prepare the workforce? Obviously, one is, you know, go through some use cases that you know, kind of illustrates what we're talking about, where it's, hey, this isn't rocket science. In some cases, you're already doing it. In some cases, it's on a spreadsheet versus, you know, somewhere else. But anyway, you know, you're doing some of this. And then, you know, how do we link that to, you know, the ultimate end states where, hey, we do want a little bit of tech helping us, you know, answer some of the test questions per se. Who wants to jump on that?
Yeah, I could jump in real quick and then turn it over to them. But like one of the things is, you know, that you need use cases. And what that ties back to for me is quite literally people want, if we want to get people on board, we have to illuminate for them what's in it for them. You know what I mean? It goes back to that old adage, like, is it what's in it for me is a very powerful thing for people who are not necessarily comfortable with data and AI and analytics and tools and dashboards, because that's not their background. It's not what they went for. So number one is, can we give them a why? Hey, guess what? How many of you have a job that is not busy? Right? Everybody's going to say their job is busy. Well, what if we could show you that using these tools and technologies we are providing you will free up X amount of time for you? That's in it for you. I think another thing that you hit upon that is very real is the use cases, right? Like, we could talk about this all day long, but if we have not proven out how this impacts or is empowering to them, they might not care one bit. It's like, great, I know you're talking about it, but I have not seen that actual tangible outcome. So giving them that tangibility is key.
Yeah, I think that seems pretty important to me. I know in one example we've used in the Adjutant General is, hey, when we went out and showed trends to commanders in the Army tied to our line of duty processing, and this is really tied to a casualty event, we saw some radical behavior changes, you know, once we did that. But it took us a little bit of time to get the data together to show the trend that you know, highlighted very clearly for commanders that, ooh, I probably had to do something different here. And we saw a real quick change in behavior from those commanders' units, which is the outcome that we really wanted. We wanted them to do line of duty determinations faster, and then, you know, really what ended up happening was, hey, they did line of duty determinations faster. But it took us time, you know, to put that data together to show the trend. Very powerful example that I continue to use here inside of HRC. The what is in it for me, you know, I don't know. Tom, you want to rip on that a little bit?
Yes, sir. So I think, you know, like one is first is buying people the time and space to actually take data 101 as an organization. I think that's the first thing, right? Because it really helps individuals to think critically, I found.
Yeah.
And a really good example, actually, while I was here this week, I was talking to a crew manager from a particular branch. He said they really enjoyed the data 101 class. And in part, he was able to go back and he was looking at a promotion chart from the lieutenant colonel board that just completed. and realize that historically the way that data has been presented was historically flawed.
Yeah.
Because if you looked at the underlying data set, we were fundamentally comparing apples and oranges. And so for the first two times he did the analysis, he realized he was just kind of adding on to the bad data. But now that he kind of understands some of the backbone of it, he was able to think critically about it and realized, wait a second, we're making a fundamental mistake. And now he's going back through and updating the baseline data set. So now, you know, we have a much better product moving forward, and we can now make actionable insights, which I think ties into what you were saying earlier about thinking critically and then diving deeper as to what is really what we're looking for from some of these analyses.
Yeah, yeah, no, I think that's pretty awesome to hear that that's one of the very, very quick outcomes from just going to the course. You know, my mind goes to, okay, so then how do you start to move a whole organization? Obviously, you're doing Data 101. Everyone gets exposed, right? That's a, what, 3-5 day?
It's a four-day course, or 2.5 hours
course.
Each day.
There you go. So it's really like 3 days total if you added it all up. But, 4 days, partial days. But I start to think of other things like, hey, specific leader instruction, LPDs that are sprinkled, every month through the calendar. Lunch sessions, maybe even regular refresher, you know, courses. And then of course, we're talking about even another level of training, right? A 201 or a 301 type level that deep dives into, you know, more critical, skills and capabilities. So then, you know, tying in a approach to your roadmap. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think for me, you know, you talked a lot through kind of the training element. For me, the part that's really fascinating is how do you institute that culture? Mm-hmm. And how do we get leaders asking data-driven questions when they're seeing the graphs, right? So perhaps when, you know, you're talking to the individual that was looking at that promotion chart historically, they were looking at it and just interested in the trend, and they were, you know, taking it for what it was worth at face value. But can we get our senior leaders to asking questions now about, that's interesting, but why did you select that data set that you did? How did you, you know, conduct the analysis? Is that just a correlation, or is that causally linked? How can we do an experiment to validate the results that we are seeing? And getting them to think critically, because I think that's how we then make that leap from that training and education at the leader level to then correcting the culture moving forward, right? Where now we're not just talking about it, we're now able to then go about doing it and then reinforcing it with the command that it's important, which should then feed the importance of Data 101 later on down the road as well.
Yeah, I would just say you're shifting the culture, right?
Yes, sir.
You know, versus correcting. But, you know, it's leading all to the same thing. Jordan and Chris, a lot of this is like, it appears to me, they were trying to drive the employee to be maybe a little more inquisitive based on the skills that you just were presented with in the work that they're doing. I don't know, what do you kind of think about that?
Yeah, I think 100% that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get them interested in something that previously might have been a little bit of a black box to them, but we want to get in there and poke around. Why is this happening? You know, what does this do? How can I use this to buy back some decision space for myself? And instead of having to go back and check these assumptions, how can I interrogate the charts and the information that I'm being presented with in a way that lets me kind of quickly cut through to something happening? Just like Tom's example of the branch manager who was able to look at the data sets and say, well, okay, that actually looks weird. I'm not going to take this at face value and then have to go back and explain it again later when I figured out that there's something wrong with it. I can interrogate it from the start and figure out what's going on. And I just wanted to add in also that I think, you know, coming back again to what both Jordan and Tom were saying about the weather, we're very comfortable with interrogating those different charts and presentations because we're comfortable with the decision space and the risk in the process. What data literacy training and what that curiosity allows us to do is get a better sense of the context of the decision and how the data exists within that space, so that we can better trust what it's telling us, trust what we know about the situation to know when something looks off and dig into it, and then trust our decisions afterward.
Yeah.
Go ahead, General.
No, go ahead, please.
No, like, I think it's so spot on. Like, one of the things that the word in there that we should be focusing, one of them anyway, is comfort, right? One of the things that we need data literacy to do for people so that they're using it more is creating a space of comfort. Mm-hmm. Like, exactly, you know, prior to the podcast, we're talking about sports and music and things that people, when we talk about those, they are familiar with it. The issue that I think one of the cultural issues we can run into is a lack of comfort within data realms and within the business setting. I like the phrase, practice makes permanent. Not practice makes perfect, because you can practice it imperfectly, right?
Yeah.
But practice makes permanent. So can we create in everybody this idea? Like, my first C of data and AI literacy is curiosity, right? All we want to do is get them doing that. Now, they still might come back and be like, well, I don't know where to begin. And one of the things that they could do to begin is pinpoint one area, one objective they are trying to achieve, and just ask the question, how does data support this? How can I use data to support this? Because it's the conceptual side of this is wonderful. We can talk conceptually all day long. Then they're going to sit there and say, well, how do I put it into operation? And that could be a little harder. So then it becomes, oh, here's two objectives or problems we're trying to solve. Can we figure out how data does this? And that allows them to actually find a process and create a use case and a proof of concept to get that culture and that shift driving forward.
Yeah, maybe Tom, as we're going through our data 101, you're giving a little bit of homework here, you know, to go back and chew on your stuff and then brief out to your supervisor.
Yes, sir. Well, that's actually part of the reason why we teach data 101 over the course of 4 days, right? We can very easily consolidate a lot of times down into a day or a day and a half class. But the beauty of doing it just 2.5 hours each day is that you could take the lessons that we talked about, go back to your desk, go back to your email, go back to whatever you're normally doing and realizing, wow, I just touched this type of data, or wow, I never really thought about this problem that I'm solving from a data-centric standpoint, and how can I go about solving it?
Yeah.
The first thing we talk when we talk data literacy is developing good data-driven questions, ones that are specific, measurable, action-oriented, relevant, and time-bound. And so the hope is, right, and as you go through the course, we develop a practical exercise where you ask a question on that very first day, and you're continuously refining it all the way through the end of that fourth day, with the hopes that when you're done, you now have a problem that you can go back to your regular work on and try to potentially solve and move back up the chain of command.
Yeah, and I don't know, rushing through my brain is like a million use cases in all areas of the tag. There's just so many opportunities, I think, as we get the workforce comfortable as to what Jordan is saying, to just looking at what we can do to improve. You know, obviously to link it to, for us, it's a lot about those people that we're supporting, right? So soldiers, families, veterans, et cetera. If I was to bring it all the way back to the strategic goals that we highlighted earlier, you know, in the discussion on the why. Okay, so we're getting close to the end. I definitely want to pass it around to our three guests on last words. So, Chris, you know, anything here you wanna add in at the end here?
No, I think we've covered a lot of really interesting ground, but I really kind of want to come back to the idea of change management again.
Yeah.
Because as we're bringing on these new skills, we want to make sure that they are inculcated, that we have opportunities to test and to, you know, display the mastery of these skills as we're going forward. And kind of creating that incentive structure to incentivize people demonstrating that knowledge, I think, is a very critical piece. We want to reward that curiosity. We want to reward that use of the new skill and the understanding of data in a way that we haven't necessarily previously. So as we're rolling out the roadmap, making sure that we're doing that from the perspective that our folks need to be getting something out of this, not just getting out, you know, additional efficiencies and the comfort with the data that they're able to get in there and make decisions off it and interrogate it appropriately, but also understanding that we appreciate their willingness to do that, to learn, to adapt.
Yeah, and, you know, what jumps into my mind is, you know, hey, how do you then, you know, maybe measure, track, and adaptation, adoption, et cetera, even through the level of new use cases. But that's very helpful. Hey, Jordan, I want to pass it to you. What say you?
No, I like where the conversation went. I think what we're getting at is there's more strategic ways of looking at this once you take the course, right? I like how Tom said we're only doing 2.5 hours a day.
That's right.
Because we want you to go back and think about
get to the course
data points you're already using, right? And we're talking about change management. We can't just, you know, poof, take a course and it magically happens. We need to think about recognition and rewarding and bringing use cases and finding, as you three and everybody knows me, the human element that is attached to all of this. And humans like praise. They like getting that sort of comfort and all of that. So I just think that this whole episode, right, was what's next? Well, I think we're hitting on some of the things that leaders on down to the workforce and to the foot soldiers and everything like that, things that could be done to make this tangible and real. And it's awesome. And yes, you brought it up. We will be looking at what next courses do we design so that we get this going even more.
Yeah, yeah. A lot there, Jordan. I appreciate you plugging in with us today. And Tom, let's, you know, for me, from a more, you know, practical stance, like, hey, what is coming next here at HRC? Because I know we've been talking a lot about everything we've said on the podcast today, but there's some tangible things that we're already executing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, right, so as you look towards just the class spectrum, right, I know there's a Power BI course that's currently in development and being executed across the tag. We're also working on developing what does that data strategy look like for the whole of HRC, kind of setting that policy and trying to start turning that action lever that Jordan talked about at the very beginning. But in terms of culture, where I think we can almost immediately go is, you know, asking supervisors to give their individual space to experiment and giving them the time to be curious. Because tying back to what Colonel Sailing said during her final thoughts, right, like, one of the areas that we had a lot of success when we worked together in the talent management task force was that we had the time and space and resources to experiment. And that's what ultimately led to some things like AutoRedact, right? Our named entity recognition tool that allowed us to change the way we process peer and subordinate feedback for the command assessment program is because we had the time and the support of the command to think about things differently and then apply new techniques to ultimately save a ton of manpower by automating away some processes that were very, very manpower intensive.
Yeah. Hey, we've mandated 2 hours a week in the tag for training. Now, you know, the opportunity is there. But I go back to the adaptation and how do we make it, you know, kind of safe and interesting and really identify what's it in for each of the employees that we have. That's something that we probably need to pay a little more attention to. But hey, Tom, thanks. Appreciate you. Appreciate Jordan and Chris Sailing for being on. Fantastic discussion, but probably more fantastic that I'm surrounded by like the super nerdy, smart, awesome professionals. So I appreciate you being here today on Tag Talks. For those that are listening, you can follow us on all our social media outlets at the Adjutant General, and looking forward to talking to you soon. Thanks.